financial planner, Dave Petzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzo.
Good morning and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are here again this morning filling in for Dave Petzo. He is actually back in Boston this week meeting with a couple of fund families that we do use. He takes his time to go out, research them, and bring us back information, so we greatly appreciate him having the time to do that. This morning, Tom and I decided it was a good time to talk about the history of the market, so we're going to go into that in as much detail as we possibly can, but what we want from you, because most of you have been investors for a very long time, listen to Dave, we want your stories. We want to know, what was the first stock you purchased? What did the world look like at that time? What made you do that? So please, please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or you can email us at petzofinancial@petzofinancial.net. But before we jump into that, I just wanted to take 2 seconds to mention a benefit concert that's going on tonight in Star for the Morietti family. The reason why is his sister actually plays soccer for a club that I'm closely attached to. And we're going to be out there helping as well. But he passed away just recently from cancer, and this is a benefit for the family. If you want more information, it is on KTVB's website as well as meridianunited.org. So if you have time, come out, check it out, and come listen to some great music. So with that, we do need to throw in a real quick disclosure since we are doing a lot of historical data here, and that's just what it is. Past performance, no guarantee, all that good stuff that we always say. But we do want to, you know, talk about the world a little bit, how it's changed, what we see, what Tom and I have gone through just in our brief history with the market as well as our lives. We get a lot of calls from people worried about the world, where it's going, how things are. Tom, you can add to this, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. We, especially people, new people coming in, we hear a lot of stories how concerned people are about where the world is going, where we are, and really negative type of thought process of, I just can't believe how bad it is now, and so forth. And we were sitting around talking about that just recently, and we started thinking, you know, it really isn't that bad. You know, we have a lot of great things going on, and I think humans just naturally gravitate toward the negative. But we wanted to step back and kind of go, you know what, especially since we grew up and what we've experienced and how things have improved, just how good it is and what a great country we live in, and how happy we should be and grateful for what we have.
And I think the more we're kind of, I guess the only way to put it, number geeks. So we like to run the data. We like to see the history, to see where we came from, why we are where we are. And the more we looked at it, I have to say, the more optimistic I became. It's pretty amazing. I mean, I just look back to when I was a little girl, we moved from Denver to Rigby, Idaho. We lived on a dirt road. We had a party line, so we'd always pick up the phone to see if the neighbor was on before we could talk. We did have 3 channels, maybe 4, but we had to make sure those rabbit ears were just right to be able to pick it up. And, you know, it was simple things like when I worked at my first high school job. We backed up the computer system at a very large retailer with those great big floppy disks where you put one in, once it beeped, you put the next one in, and now everything is instantaneously backed up to the cloud. It's unbelievable how far even something as simple as that has come. I mean, we paid at that time everybody in cash. Their thought was, you know what, they walk out the door, they're going to buy here if they have cash in their pocket. I mean, we wrote code on DOS. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I still remember my first road trip to Boise and the cell phone I was given, or excuse me, not really a cell phone, it was probably more of a mobile phone attached to a brick with a cord. And this was only maybe 30 years ago. Tom, I know you grew up
ago?
In council, and right. You can even speak more to it than that.
I have a little more age experience than you do. And growing up, you know, I grew up in a farmhouse where, you know, we didn't have any air conditioning. The summers were so hot, and we'd have fans in every room. And, you know, I slept downstairs because it was too hot to sleep upstairs. And I remember, you know, regularly buying regular gas. You don't even see that anymore. Unleaded was a new thing. I remember when, what's this unleaded thing? You need to have to worry if you put in the wrong nozzle in there. And I mean, that's kind of silly little things, but things have really changed. We had a party line, too, and I'd often get in trouble for listening in a little bit.
Finding out the gossip.
Everybody knew who was on the party line.
Absolutely.
But
I think my favorite story, too, though, is you said your air conditioning, where you put a fan over a bucket of water.
Right, so we could get a little bit of the cool water. Just those things. I milked cows when I woke up in the morning before school. I mean, that sounds like Little House on the Prairie almost, but... And buck bales, you know, in the summers. I mean, I drive through council now and through a lot of these farming communities. You don't even see bales in the fields anymore. It's these big rolled up things that are big as a car, and people don't even touch them like they used to. And so, things have really changed a lot. And I'm getting older all the time, but it just seems like things are just have changed so much. And yet, I certainly would have appreciated not being out there 100 degrees and throwing bales up on a wagon. I would have taken these big rolled-up ones if I had to.
And let the machines do all the work, right?
Right.
And now our kids, they have no idea what that's even like. Everything is done for them. I mean, communicating is done by a cell phone. I mean, our technology at our office now, we have an app that links to our iPhone that's just like we're sitting in the office. So we can answer the phone just like we're there any place in the world.
It was funny. There's a TV called TV Land, and the Brady Bunch was on the other day. And we pulled up, and they were talking on a regular phone with a cord. And our kids were going, "Why are they doing that? What is that? Why do they have that? Why don't they have a cell phone? Why are they pushing the buttons?"
And now nobody even has a phone attached to their house.
Right.
Everyone even has cell phones. I mean, we have. I think one of the cutest things was we had this little old lady, she's probably, 90, came in with her iPhone and her iPad, and she was setting everything up so she could do it all herself.
Yep. She's definitely an exception, but
yes.
She's definitely
but it was very
encouraging
cool
and
to
it's
see.
Cute.
Yeah. And I think even when I look at, I started working with Dave in 94, and we were with a company at that time that wasn't as focused on the investment side as the one we are with now. So the trading was more archaic, I guess, than you would say with maybe a wirehouse or something like that. But we actually had to, anytime we were going to do a trade, pick up the phone, call the trade desk, hope you'd get one of the two traders that were working that day, because there weren't many, stay on hold. Then you'd try to tell them what you want to do. They'd have to pull up a quote, give you the bid and ask spread, which were huge because of the way that everything worked. And then they'd put the trade in. But then they'd have to call you back with the execution, so it could be an hour, 20. We didn't know. We didn't know what it would execute for, how it would come through. I mean, now we have instant quotes on the Internet at any time. You can put in your favorites, hit refresh. They update automatically for you. We had this machine at that time. I think they called it a Quotron. Okay. And you would have to type in every single ticker. And every once in a while, I would just delete them, because I remember Dave sitting there for hours, multiple times, putting back in the symbols. And then you'd click it with this switch. It was like this toggle switch that you'd switch the pages, and it would update. I can't even remember how often, but it wasn't very frequently. And that's how we kept track of it. And then we would call in the trades for the day. But the fun thing that we actually got to do is probably 95, 96, I decided there had to be a simpler way. So we figured out with the traders at that time how to write the code to have the trade go through the system somehow. And at that time, the Internet wasn't widely known of even how it worked, and then it would show up at their desk, and then they could actually submit it away. But if you typed one word wrong, if you didn't put GTC or limit or day or whatever it might be, it'd kick it out, and you'd have to rewrite the entire thing. It was crazy how amazing that seemed to us at the time. And now if we put a trade through, you click enter, and it executes before you blink.
Right.
It's just amazing.
Thing is-
It is. It's absolutely amazing. And I just can't, I mean, I'm blown away daily. I mean, I remember we used to laugh about fax machines. You put this piece of paper on, and it'd show up at the other end exactly
right.
The same.
And I still don't
fully get that.
I'm still figuring out how TV works.
Yeah.
You know, how's that supposed to work? That just is amazing.
It
all
is.
Those things. And I'm just really impressed by people that can figure this stuff out. I worked at Micron for a number of years, and I'm still amazed by how those engineers figure out how to make such little things work so well.
So as you can see, Tom and I, we're sitting here, and we probably spent, a good amount of time just chatting about our lives and how things have changed since we started and what we've seen come through. And this regulation side, I think, is the not so much fun side of it, because there's a lot more rules than there used to be for the protection of the shareholders, but some of them get a little silly. But the rest of it is unbelievable. So it's really hard for us to not be optimistic on the world and the growth in the world and kind of look at, why are we growing? I mean, if you see the technological advances, why wouldn't everything kind of follow with that? Why would we assume the economy would stay back when everything else is growing so well?
Right. I think that if you think about it, a lot of people think the stock market is some casino or it's some big gamble, but really it's just it's part of business. And as business changes and evolves, the stock market changes and evolves. To keep up. And so as new technology becomes, the new wealth is built with these new companies coming out of the woodwork. And now even more so with GoPro just recently, within the last few years, Google, all these things, that these new innovations, people can invest in them without being one of the runners, run the company, and they can invest in it and share in that wealth building that has happened for, now we will talk here a little bit about, for hundreds of years in the markets.
I think, too, Tom has been a little bit laid up recently because he ruptured his Achilles, but they can fix it so easily. And he has this nice little scooter that he gets around the office very efficiently instead of crutches. I mean, just those small things that make your life easier.
Oh, yeah. And I know that probably not too long ago, that would have been a thing where I would have been out of work for quite a while. I was out of work for 4 days, and then I was back. It's not as nice as I'd like it, but I'm functional, and I can work from home. I had my laptop at home, and I was able to work from home. Those are the things you wouldn't have been able to do just a few years ago.
Right, and it's amazing to me, too, that he'll probably not even have a limp after this is done. So what they can do to fix things, you look at artificial knees and how quickly those are, and we see a lot of people that have replacements that just work so well. So, again, we'd really like your stories because we're sharing all of ours. So give us a call. Share with what you've grown, seen, and come through the years. And, again, share your market stories, too, because I know you have them. So give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or email us at petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net. We're going to take our first break, and when we get back, we're actually going to talk of the history of the market, not just our history.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-543-MATTERS with Dave Petso on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I am Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are here this morning filling in for Dave while he is off doing some research on fund families for us. We are talking the history of the stock market, but before we get into that, we would actually like to take a call from Jim. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Hey, Jennifer and Tom. How's it going?
We're good.
Nice to talk to you all again.
You too.
Okay, you want to hear my story about a stock, like the stock, first stock I bought?
Absolutely.
Okay, now, I know that one of Dave's heroes is Warren Buffett, but I think of him as a bully. I call him the billionaire bully. Anyway, years ago, I guess about the first stock I bought was Santa Fe. Now, I come from Clovis, New Mexico, and Santa Fe pretty much put Clovis on the map. So I was going to buy Burlington Northern Santa Fe. So I bought 100 shares, and I come home one day, and there's a message on my answering machine from my stock person, my Veronica. And she calls all excited, and she leaves a message, "Good news. Buffett is buying, Santa Fe." So, you know, I called her back. What do you mean good news, you know? Anyway, I was forced to sell.
Oh, yeah.
And I even thought, I even thought about buying an extra 100 shares of Santa Fe so I could vote against Buffett. But, I mean, I was forced to sell the stuff. Okay, then I came up with a psychological disorder, which I have entitled Buffettophobia. Okay, definition. The drastic rational fear one has when, upon investing in and purchasing common stock in a corporation for desire to own a portion of the company and not for profit, a tremendously wealthy tycoon decides he wants the company and forces you to sell your shares to him. Okay, the effects of Buffettophobia. A lasting fear that one can never have enough stocks of companies in the industry in which this confiscation experience has occurred. Okay, since then, I have bought stock in Union Pacific, Norfolk Southern, CSX, Canadian Pacific, and Providence Worcester. So anyway, that's and since then, I bought lots of stock, and I like investing.
Yeah.
Well, so, good. Well, the next time we can get an autographed picture of Warren Buffett, we'll make sure to send you a copy.
Next time you talk to your buddy Buffett, tell him I'm on my stare shocks back.
Okay.
You know, the thing is, I mean, people can do what they want to do, you know? I mean, everybody that wants to can sell their stocks directly to him. But, I mean, you know, I mean, I want to keep my 100 shares. I bought Santa Fe because I wanted Santa Fe.
Right.
Right.
So.
Well, Jim, we sure appreciate it. We always appreciate you help us out and give us a call. And, you know, last time we were on, we had 5 calls. That's our record. So everybody else out there, we're going to try to break our record if we can get to 6 today. So Jim's already got number 1 done.
Yeah.
And you can always call back, change your name.
Yeah.
We always like talking to you. So whatever you'd like to do.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday I bought shares in a company that owns Cream of Wheat.
Okay.
And I remember when I was a kid, you know, we had Cream of Wheat.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of sad that, let's face it, it takes a tragedy to be able to get a good purchase, like a war in the Middle East or a downed airliner. So anyway, my buy order executed yesterday, so I got some of that.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, those things happen, cream of wheat. It's interesting. I don't know why. That you brought why that ended up like that, but I just saw that picture of Cream of Wheat that was in the store, and it has the same picture I think on it that it did when I was growing up.
Back in the 60s,
yeah.
that black ship, you know, the same packaging and everything.
Yep.
And I don't think they've changed a bit of it. It still tastes exactly the same.
Oh,
yep.
It's great.
Yep.
Well, yeah. You know, I'd like to get a Malto meal, but that's not publicly traded.
Well, Warren Buffett probably has it.
One thing I wanted to get, my favorite candy, I got to admit, I like Reese's Cups, but Mars. As I understand it, Wrigley owns Mars and Buffett owns Wrigley.
Oh, so you can't do that.
He got you again.
Just everywhere you go.
Well, you know, I'd like to pry some loose from him on that one.
No kidding.
Well, anyway, have a great day, you all.
Thank you, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, one of our favorite callers, as always. So some of you out there, too, call and share. That was perfect. That's exactly what we're looking for. Give us your history. Let us know what your first stock was.
Good, bad, or indifferent.
Yeah, exactly. We're looking for your opinions, what you feel, how the world feels to you. Please let us know that as well.
Right. We love those stories. We were having such a good time just reminiscing in this whole last couple weeks getting ready for this. And I think it's fun to look back on how things were and how things are today.
Funny thing was, I think the more we looked, the less, like we said before, the more optimistic we became.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's through history. It's always been that way. It just, we get caught up into the crisis of the day and it kind of overshadows really how good things really are.
Absolutely. Well, we're real close up to a break here, so we figure we'll push one in right now, and then when we come back, we'll talk about the market. Please, again, like I said, we really do want your phone calls at 580-KIDO. 580-5436 or email us petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's Place is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO. Idaho's Place to Talk.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone. Tom Brown and I are filling in again this morning for Dave Petzo. Last few times we were here, we talked more on the financial planning side, getting finances in order. But this week, we were really excited to talk more about the history of the stock market. So again, we really want your stories, your calls. So please don't hesitate to give us a call at 580-KIDO. And if you're more comfortable, shoot us an email at petzofinancial@petzofinancial.net. Now we really are going to get into more of the history. Why was the stock market formed, and what started it, Tom?
Well, you know, a lot of people think the stock market is kind of a new thing, or, well, a lot of us do, but really it started back in the 15th century, and it was used, stock companies were started to finance the ships and so forth to go to the New World and India. So when they'd get these, we're going to go, they needed to get the money to pay the people and to buy the goods and so forth for these ships, and so they started these companies where people would buy stock in them to finance these trips. And then when the ships would get here or in the Caribbean or in India, they'd bring back whatever goods. Then those people would be able to participate in the profits of selling those goods.
Okay. And I guess I think the word that we see the most when people talk about the market, Wall Street, the stock exchange, those are all words that people kind of interact and use the same. And when you say the market, we always wonder, I guess in most people's head, that is the Dow.
Right.
Dow Jones Industrial Average. And it was actually, and this is always interesting to me too, the reason it was started was that the Wall Street Journal, or actually, you know what, before I go there, I'm going to take a step back real quick because I forgot about one thing that's really important to mention. What was the beginning of Wall Street? How did this start in the U.S., the modern, as we kind of know it, market? That was actually started in 1792, May 17th to be exact. The reason it's Wall Street is it was actually done, the deal on the corner of Wall Street and Broadway in New York, obviously, and under a buttonwood tree. So,
yeah, there was 24 brokers that would meet under a buttonwood tree on Wall Street, and that's where they would trade their stocks just out in the open.
Yes, so it wouldn't that be funny just to see these 24 people sitting around trading stock? And when you think about that, it wasn't even really in a building. It was under a tree.
Right, and it moved quite a bit. In fact, it moved in 1817. It was renamed the New York Stock and Exchange Board. And then it didn't move to a permanent building until 1865, January 4th, 1865.
So when you think back on how far that's even come, and that's really not that long ago.
Right, in world history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As you know, obviously there's a lot of history, and that's just recent times, really, when you think about it. And I guess now I want to talk a little bit more about the fun part of it, too, is the Dow Jones Industrial Average was actually started by the folks that had the Wall Street Journal. Their intent was actually to sell more newspapers, so they created an index in anticipation of selling more papers. And I guess kind of the funny thing about that is newspapers are now kind of going away, and there's a new index, it seems like, all the time of some kind, ETFs, all these different types of investments, but the newspapers are kind of going away. So it's funny when you think about that, and the Wall Street Journal debuted actually in 1889. The Dow Jones Industrial Average started again by Charles Dow in 1896. Some of the wording that I think we hear tossed around a lot that maybe is a little confusing, so Tom and I came up with some good examples to hopefully clarify how are markets weighted, because we do think that the Dow is probably one of the worst indexes to follow.
It's the most popular, but it's really the worst predictor of the market or representation of the market that is public or publicized.
The main reason is there's only 30 stock in the index.
Right.
So I don't know how that can really give too broad of an overview of what the overall market's doing. Plus, the way it is valued, priced, it's done by the price of the shares. So it's price weighted. what that means, I think the easiest way to look at that is, say you have two companies. We'll use Jim's favorite, but Berkshire Hathaway and Warren Buffett's company, that if it was same cap basically weighting, which means company size, as Microsoft. So if they're the similar size, but the pricing, if they were both in the Dow, if Berkshire was in the Dow, because its price is so high, it would be 98% of that company.
Isn't that amazing?
So when you look at that, it's amazing to me to think that you can have two companies exactly the same size, but one would overwhelm the Dow.
Right.
So, of course, it won't ever be in it.
Right. And that's why some stocks, if they move a lot, they can really move the Dow, like IBM or something, mm-hmm. if they have a big move.
Right. And then another thing that we think I find interesting is GE was one of the original stocks in the Dow when it was started, and it's still there.
Right. It just goes to show you that some companies last, some don't,
mm-hmm.
and they go in and out as technology changes, but GE's been one that's been able to stay in business and keep going for since way back then.
Yeah, and another interesting point that Tom found while we were doing all this research is who started GE.
Right, originally Thomas Edison, after he did the electric, the light bulb, started General Electric.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a call real quick from Kay. Good morning, Kay. How are you?
Hi. Well, I was wondering what you think. Now, there's a man on the radio. He's on every day, and he tells people that they don't have to have a FICO score. And it's my understanding that if you don't have a good FICO score, you're going to get charged more for your insurance rates. There's people that won't rent to you. You'll get charged a higher interest on your mortgage. And he also tells people that if their name's not on the credit card or on the bills, that they're not responsible. Well, what if you live in a community property state? I think he gives out a lot of misinformation. What do you think?
I'm going to let Tom answer that one because he's more familiar, I think, with maybe what you're talking about.
You're talking about Dave Ramsey, right?
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention any names.
Well, that's fine. He's on here he's on this radio station, so I don't think it's a big deal. What he's getting at is he doesn't want people to run around trying to take on debt to go through debt and build up a lot of debt, especially credit card debt and so forth, to try to just improve their credit score. He does understand that credit scores are important in our society, but he would rather people pay cash and do things the right way and manage their money better than just using debt to do that, because we see people get in trouble more with debt than they do if they paid cash. And his thought process is, instead of trying to go with society and say, you know, take on debt, get a credit card so you can get your credit score up, try to do everything, get your credit score better, is better to fundamentally do your finances where you don't have to rely on your credit score to be successful.
But you get charged more for insurance and more for, some people will rent to you. I pay mine off every single month, and my credit score is way up in the 800s. I charge everything I can because then I use the points I get to get free things. I get a whole bunch of free stuff.
But you're disciplined, Kay. The problem that we're finding and that he's referring to, that most people can't do that. Most people rack up debt and they pay the minimums. And the minimums are never going to decrease that. So some people know how to use credit responsibly. Others do not. And that score, all it really measures is how well you pay back debt. So if you don't,
that's important. That tells a lot about a person.
It does, as long as you use debt. I mean, a lot of people that pay cash don't have a problem with that.
And just because you pay cash, in a lot of ways, it is still affecting your credit score in a positive way. It just isn't as big a factor as if you do what you're talking about. So like Jennifer was saying, more often than not, a lot of people that utilize debt do two things that are wrong. One, they can't pay it off and they get in trouble and go bankrupt. Second thing is that they will end up paying more for stuff because they're utilizing something like a credit card where studies show that you can overspend because it just doesn't seem real.
Well, what you need to do is discipline yourself so that you don't ever charge more than you know you're going to be able to pay off when your paycheck comes. And what do you think about that community property thing? He's telling people that, well, if your name isn't on there, you're not responsible, just the person whose name's on there. 8 states, 8 or 10 are community property states.
Doesn't he know that?
Yeah, I'm sure that may not be what he's referring to. He may be talking not spouses. He's probably not getting that specific.
Yes, he is.
But sometimes he's a national program. He's not just local. So sometimes I think trying to answer specifics for each state law, he's just trying to do like a blanket kind of a thing. Because there's some other things that he says that we don't agree with. But I think in the society that we're in, not a lot of people can handle credit like you do. I mean, we see it a lot where people are just overdone, then they lose a job or they get hurt, they can't work. Something comes up that all of a sudden their plan of, you know what, I can afford to charge $1,000 a month on my credit card. Oh, now I can't. And then it just starts to compound on itself. That's what he's trying to get away from. I think he's just trying to get people to be more responsible overall with their finances than to be saying, hey, this will affect your credit score one way or the other. I don't think that's his biggest concern.
But if somebody does have a credit card and all of a sudden, like, they have to have a $1,000 root canal, or they in an accident and then have to go to the doctor, and they've already used up their emergency fund, they better have a credit card that they can rely on.
Well, I guess that is one way to look at it. We would say that, you know, have an emergency fund, planning for things that are going to happen is the way to do it.
Use that up, something else might happen right away. It does.
Understand. I'm not saying that couldn't happen. I'm just saying that for the most part, we would rather people save up cash and utilize that and not have a backstop where they have a credit card. But a lot of people do that, and I'm not saying that can't be successful. It's just that his ideas are limit, get away from credit, because most people don't have discipline and they can't handle it and they get into trouble, and we find more people will be better off that way than they are if they're relying on credit to just get through day-to-day type of expenses.
Well, I don't know what's wrong with people.
Well,
I like my freedom.
You can have your own radio program and just name it that.
Exactly. All right, Kay, we appreciate your call.
Okay.
Have a great weekend. All right. We're going to take a break now. So when we come back, again, please give us your calls. Anything you have questions on is fine as well. But if you have a story on the stock market, your history, different investments that you purchased, we'd love to hear them. And we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-543-CIDO. Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I am Jennifer Stone. Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petzo this morning. We are both CFPs with Petzo Financial, and we are talking stock market history this morning. But we also are talking a little personal history and different things that we've experienced growing up and with the market, and we want your stories too. So please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or even shoot an email over at petzofinancial@petzofinancial.net. So we covered the Dow a little bit when we came back and how it was created and why. And now we want to talk about, I guess I think it's a little bit better of a representation of the market just because there are more stock in it, which is the S&P 500. It was started a little bit smaller, Tom, back in 1923. And at that time it was just a composite income, and it was just by one person. And then 1926 they were up to 90 stock, 1941. Poor's Publishing merged with them to create the Standard & Poor's. And then I think the modern S&P was created in 1957.
Yeah, 1957. It's interesting how big a difference we have. The Dow is out there, and you know, although we hear S&P 500, it was actually over 60 years later before it is the what we know the S&P now, look at it now, is it started. So the Dow was the only one out there for so long where it was 500 stocks. It's interesting.
It is. It's really kind of amazing. And we did an analysis because, again, like I mentioned, we do like to look at numbers. And we ran the historical returns of the S&P since 1926. And when you look through it, it's kind of amazing to think about that out of 88 years, from 1926 to 2013, only 24 of those years were negative. I mean, that really takes pause there when we think about how awful the world is and how the market's going to crash and, oh, my gosh, we got to get out. But that's a pretty big bet you're making there if only 24 out of 88 years does it go negative. Of course, I know, historical returns and all that, there's no guarantees. But when you think about that many years, that's 27.3% of the time that the market actually is negative.
Right. And, you know, out of 64, that's 72.7% that it's positive. I think if you went anywhere and someone gave you that those odds, that would be a pretty good bet to take.
I think so. Plus, then we even digested it a little bit further and looked into it and said, okay, so what percentage of the time is the market up over 10%? Because we know the magnetic pull to 10 that we talk about all the time, the average is 10. How many times is the market up over 10? It's 60% of the time.
Yeah. That's amazing, isn't it?
It really is. So when you think about it, and I know that we don't know what's going to happen in the future. We can't tell it. This is all a historical look at everything. But those are pretty good odds that this isn't as rigged a game as people say it is.
Right. And you know, we were talking about it yesterday. And, of course, we don't want to skew the numbers and we want to keep all the actuals. But if you take the 1930s out, when there was a lot of there wasn't as much as far as regulation. You know, the worst year in the market was 43%, and that was in 1931. And so we take some of those numbers out, you know, that it even gets better. And that was before the SEC was around. That was a lot before people were really paying attention. And I watched a thing on the stock market crash just not too long ago. And, you know, insider trading wasn't a bad thing in the late 1920s. In fact, that was the rule of the day. People would push stocks around. You know, big guys on Wall Street would push stocks around just because they could, and it was completely legal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the regulations and so forth now, you know, you take that the 30s where it was kind of just a Wild West show, what it was going to be like. I think another interesting thing about the 1930s and the Depression era is we had the worst S&P return. But then we had the best also. People don't understand that right in the middle, or kind of in the middle, in 1933, that the best year in the stock market was, or in the S&P anyway, was 53.99% in 1933. That's amazing to me.
And then I think to even add to that is in 1934, it was down a little over 1%. 35 was the second best performing year, which was 47.67% up. Sure.
1936, 33.92%.
Yes, yes.
I mean, these are great returns. We had, what, a little over 30%, 31% last year
mm-hmm,
or so in
mm-hmm,
the S&P.
Mm-hmm.
We think that's great. This is right in the middle of the Depression.
And, you know, the funny thing we talk about, too, is, again, the human mind is just an amazing thing when we think about it. But we see returns very linearly. So, in other words, when we say the market does 10, we see a straight-up line. But another number that I ran, again, because we're silly this way, how many times did the S&P actually hit the average? Out of 88 years, it only hit it 2 times. I mean, so you're never going to be right on. So when people get scared out of the market, they have to realize to get to that average, we have these big swings, but it always does seem to go right back to that number. So it's an amazing thing when you really look at it, and you look through the numbers even closer. And when I tell people that you can't try to outguess this, who would have thought, like Tom pointed out, that after the horrible, I mean, we had... What, 1, 2, 3, 4 years in a row of straight down numbers in the S&P from 1929 to 1932. Who would have ever bet on putting money back in?
Right.
No one would have taken that bet. Everybody would have said, see, it's going to zero. We're totally out. We're never going to be in the market again. But, again, just because we know recent human behavior, they all would have gotten out in 32.
Right.
So and then they would have missed it.
And, again, most of the population was just trying to feed themselves at the time and figuring out where they're going to live. And didn't have the means. But if you had the means, it would have been a great time to be investing, although things were literally black in those years.
Yeah, I know. And that's the part, too, when everyone wanted to compare what we went through in recent history in 08 to the Great Depression. That was a little hard for us just because, Tom can say that his mom, she actually lived through this. She's the dust bowls, the dark clouds, and not knowing where your next meal was coming from. Our biggest fear was, the market may go down today.
Right. There wasn't this thing where there's so many. And again, a lot of people suffered in 2008, 2009, and that certainly is not taken away from that. But the things that I grew up with, the stories I grew up with you know, there were, you know, clouds of locusts, and you know, people thought that Hitler was the Antichrist and they're jumping out of buildings, and they thought literally that, and very literally, that this was the end of the world, and you had a lot of pretty significant things that right out of the Bible that were happening right at that time, and so we compare that to now, where we're just going, you know, well, I hope my unemployment continues to go, you know, continue or something like that, is a pretty significant contrast.
It really is. So far this hour, like I said, we've been talking about the history of the market, but you're not calling. We really do want your story.
Four more calls.
We do, at least four more. So please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or if you're more comfortable sending us an email, please do so at petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net. We come back next hour. We'll continue the discussion on the history of the market.
Last night we put on an epic light show.
Yeah, we did.
The crowd loved us. We loved the crowd.
Wait, but there were only four people out there.
Yeah, but did you see their four faces? All eight of their eyes lit up brighter than ours. And we're fireflies.
Yeah, we are.
Hey, that one girl, she looked like she'd never seen glow-in-the-dark like this before, and we invented glow-in-the-dark.
Yeah, we invented it.
And we're going to be out here every night rocking out our light show at a forest near you.
Woo-hoo!
So come check us out.
Check us out.
And bring your kid, all ages show. Oh, but don't bring any of those glass jars, because they make us kind of nervous.
Yeah, and I'm super claustrophobic.
Whether you're rocking their world or they're rocking yours, some memories never fade. Come alive with the forest. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a forest near you. And discover other cool things to do when you go, like fishing, biking, or even camping. Visit discovertheforest.org.
See you later!
Yeah, see you soon!
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ag.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I am Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I are filling in for Dave Petso again this week while he is off learning about a few fund companies. Just quickly, again, wanted to mention a benefit concert tonight for the Anthony Moretti family. He's a little boy that died of cancer here recently, and they're doing a concert out in Star. It's at Blake Haven Park, which is Blake Drive and Star, Idaho, corner of Blake Drive and Star Road. Gates open at 5:30. Music starts at 6. If you want more information, I know that it is on KTVB's website, as well as MeridianUnited.org, which is a soccer club close to my heart. So if you have time today to make it out there, we're going to be out doing some of the refreshments and taking care of things for the concession-type stand out there. So please, if you have time, come out, listen to some good music, and come join us. Second, we did actually get an email today, and we're going to share it with you real quick. It's from one of our clients, and he didn't give his name, but it's a client that we know, and he says, thanks for sharing your personal history a little with us on the show. Two of you with Dave all appear to have similarities growing up with him. Comfort in knowing that he invests with us. He also remembers the party lines, awful technology. He does appreciate our short history on the Dow, the market. But bigger than that, he says he feels comfortable talking with us, likes to hear that Dave's back doing research and know that we like to take so much time to research the numbers. What his questions were, what is the major takeaway when looking at market history? Are there far more good times than bad? Not a sprint. What was our major takeaway? I think we kind of covered a little bit of that, wouldn't you say, Tom, with history?
Yeah, I think as we go through, as we dig in the numbers, as you said before, as we look at this more and more and really pick these things apart, we get kind of impressed even more, even though we knew this stuff in general, when we look at it year to year and over time, just how really surprising how well the market's done over time. It's amazing.
It really is, and I think it's enjoyable too. And I want to take a second just to thank Dave too for doing all the homework that he does. I know we like to joke and say that people tease and say he goes and plays a lot of golf and he's gone a lot, but I have to tell you, he's the hardest working person that we know. He does travel constantly. He does go to all these different companies to do research because it's not good enough for him just to read the data. He wants to know the players. He wants to know them personally to understand their opinions, their heart, their philosophy, how the company's even set up, how do they do their research. That's why he goes a lot of the time, just to go see what's going on back there. So, again, he is gone again this week, so when you call in, he really is out doing homework and helping us to all become better advisors. when we left, we kind of covered the S&P. We did. This one was interesting, too. When we were going through the S&P and looking at the historical data, we thought, you know, we actually have to look at the NASDAQ. I know it's a newer index. It was created in 1971. It's the first electronic market, trading at that time over 2,500 securities. And it was started by the NASD, who is now FINRA, which is the regulatory agency that watches over advisors. But I think the most interesting thing was, Tom?
That one of the people that helped get the NASDAQ started and off the ground was Bernie Madoff. Mm-hmm. And he actually was chairman and president of the NASDAQ in the early 90s. So it is interesting that he was a big part of that. And, in fact, I read a book about him, and they think that was one of the reasons he got away with his Ponzi scheme as long as he did, is because the regulators really appreciated that what he did as far as forming the NASDAQ, because back in the 70s and the late 60s, the New York Stock Exchange kind of was the only game in town and kind of was the bully on the block, and they didn't really have there wasn't any real competition. So when Bernie came along and helped formulate this new index, new exchange, to give them some competition, it really changed things for the regulators. So a lot of people think that that's a reason why for a long time, the people looked the other way.
Which does make some sense, because every time we look at that, and it was really a pivotal point, I think, for a lot of people, that and some of the big companies going away like Enron, those type of events were very impactful on people's lives, because they thought, how could this person get away with this? It blows my mind the people that were actually investing with him, because they were not beginning investors. They did their homework, they did their research, but it was such a trust thing. And he was giving finder's fees to people, so he would pay them to send more people his way.
Right. He was manipulating things on a lot of different levels. It's amazing the people that basically gave him billions of dollars and didn't really look under the hood to see what was going on, which there wasn't much under the hood.
There was nothing under the hood. I saw a show, and we were talking about this week, that one of his floors of his office building had a legitimate operation. The other one was where everybody worked just making phony statements. So right. If the regulators just opened the door, looked, it wouldn't have been hard to discover.
Right. There's a lot of different things that, looking back, they missed and didn't. If they would have just done a couple things, it would have changed things quite a bit.
Which brings us to do your homework on your financial advisor. There's a lot of data out there. See what they've done. Check their history. FINRA does do a good job of reporting that. So if you go to FINRA.org, you can pull it up through BrokerCheck just to see who you're investing with. Not that that would have given any sort of red flag there, but just make sure you do your homework. Do more than just word of mouth. Figure out on your own. See if this is the right place for you to be.
Right. Right.
Okay. So,
one other thing I wanted to say that we didn't mention on the S&P 500 versus the Dow, it is market cap weighted, not price weighted. And I know we touched on that a little bit with the example about Berkshire Hathaway. But when it's market cap weighted, which means that it's the amount of outstanding shares multiplied by the stock price, it gives a little bit more balance to the whole exchange, because not one stock can have such an effect, an overwhelming effect. Obviously, there's 500 stocks versus 30, but having that market cap allows it to not be affected by one or two stocks so much as the Dow does.
And plus, because, like we said before, even if the company sizes are the same, if a company splits down to nothing, then they're nothing in the Dow. But in the S&P, because the value of the company isn't affected by stock splits. I know everybody wants to have their company split, but when a company splits, it doesn't change the value. It just changes the price. So that right there in the Dow would have been a tremendous impact because all of a sudden it's worth a lot less, so their weighting would be a lot less.
Right.
But in the S&P, because it is based on the value of that company, then it wouldn't have affected it at all.
Right. And another thing, and again, this is going a little bit different direction, but when we have people come in and they're wanting to know how the returns are doing versus the S&P or the Dow, or not too many people mention the NASDAQ, but a lot of people use these two indexes as a measure of how successful they are, it is really important to understand that the Dow is 30 stocks and the S&P is 500 stocks, and they're large cap stocks. They're
all stocks, U.S.
And they're all U.S. So if you have international, you have bonds, you have different things in your portfolio, to compare them to the S&P 500 or to the Dow is really mixing apples and oranges. You have to look a little bit deeper, have to look a lot more on a lot of different aspects of it and not just purely on these exchanges or indexes and try to make a decision whether you're being successful.
And I think there's more to being successful than just performance anyways. What is your objective? Is your objective to have your money outlive you, to provide a steady flow of income, or is it to get the highest possible performance? Those are different objectives for every individual. Most people don't go in saying, I have to outperform everything and take so much risk that I may lose everything. I don't think a lot of people believe that. People don't come in saying, I want to live a lower standard of living the rest of my life. So when you go in and you decide what your objective with your investments are, then create a plan for that and don't let the performance throw you off your plan, because the plan doesn't change based on what the market performance is normally. Obviously, you have to be diligent in certain things, but don't let the performance dictate your goal or your objective.
Right. I think that I think it gets pulled into this, well, how are we beating the market? How do we do against the market? I think it's just human nature to be competitive, and you're competing against something. You want to have something to hang your hat on, whether how you're doing. And so it is a kind of a different paradigm when you're looking at how am I doing compared to where I want to be, not how am I doing against some, you know, index that has nothing to do with your current situation. In fact, if you're beating the market on the high side every year, you're probably taking on more risk than you need or that you probably are willing to take, and at some point it's going to backfire.
Kind of look at Tom's running analogies. I always think they're good. If you go out to run a marathon and you're keeping up with those sprinters in the front, but you know there's no way you can maintain that long term because you're just you're not that good of a runner, or do you go slow and steady and finish? Those
right.
are the things. You don't have to be with the winners the entire time if you're going to get off because you can't stay that pace. You just need to slow down, go slow and steady, and do what you can do to keep your objective strong.
Right. It's fun to watch this stuff. It's fun to run the numbers, all that kind of thing. But when it comes down to planning, I think it's where we need to set that stuff aside. And it's hard for us to do that because we gravitate toward this stuff.
But, as we are today.
Yeah.
We're telling you the history
right.
of the market
right.
and how good it's been.
Right. But really, when it comes to investing, you really have to put that stuff aside and make sure that we're doing the right things for you, not the right things compared to the market.
Yes. So what we'd like to do now is do a little bit of a walk through history on different decades, how they held up, what was going on at that time. So we have a little bit of a hypothetical that we put together. Aggressive growth down to income is kind of how it's laid out, and it's represented by the S&P, so we're not quoting any mutual funds because we want to be very clear. We're not looking for the best performing funds out there. We're just trying to give you history, what happened, how things are going, what was going on those different decades, why would you not want to invest, and what would have happened if you did invest. So we're going to walk through a little bit of history that way, too. But what we would really like is if you would call us and share your stories. We only have 2 calls so far. We are hoping for 6. So we need a couple more before we end the hour here. So right now we will take a break. When we come back, we're going to go more into the history. Please give us a call at 580-KIDO or send us an email. We want to thank the client that did do so because it's fun to hear those as well. email is petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net, and we'll be back to talk more history on the market.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-540. Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone filling in for Dave Petso. Tom Brown and I are here today talking about the history of the stock market. Again, we still do want your phone calls at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or if it's better, send us an email, petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net. So we're going to walk through, like we said, kind of like a decade-by-decade review of the S&P, basically to say what happened during these decades, what was going on, why would we not want to invest, and what happened to the S&P during those decades. So I'm going to start with the 30s. Obviously, we all know how horrible those times were. Basically, the Great Depression started in 1930, finished in 1936, actually bottomed in 33, like we talked about before, with a 50% down year. One-fourth of the civilian labor force was unemployed. Can you imagine?
Right, we're worried about 6 to 7% now, and it was 25%.
Yeah. And then in every asset class, pretty much, when you look through it, struggled during that time. But even with everything going on, when we had annual inflation rate was actually a negative, so we had deflation, unemployment rate, like we talked about, averaged 18.23. It ended up, I mean, at one point it was down 25, but then it ended at averaged at 18.23. The S&P was actually even for that decade. So you did not lose money. You didn't make any money, but you didn't lose any money.
Right. It's pretty amazing when we look back and we say, you know, the stock market could have actually broke even.
Yeah, especially with everything that was horrible during that time.
Right, and a lot of people don't know that we hit another bear market toward the end of that decade in 1937, which mm-hmm. it was down 35%. So with all that, it ended up even. That was pretty remarkable.
It really was.
I'm going to jump in here with the 1940s. And as we know, the 1940s were primarily a lot of World War II took place, started in 1941, ran through into 1945. And with that, and with all the, you know, the one thing about World War II is it really invigorated the economy. It really got us out of the Depression. Everything we needed to generate and all the stuff we needed to make to support the war effort really got us out of the Depression. And with that, and with people coming back from the war and starting families and so forth, it really did wonders for the market. And so the unemployment rate, we were talking about the unemployment rate, went down to 5%. It was 5.17% during the 1940s. And the S&P had an average overall of 9.17%.
Right. And during that decade, there were only 3 losing years, and only one of them was down more than 10. So it was quite a recovery considering everything that was going on. And I'm sure at the time living through it, no one would have thought that there'd be any reason in the world for it to come back like that.
Right. And like I said, you know, the thoughts of, you know, you had Pearl Harbor there. You had where we were fighting Hitler and the, you know, we dropped 2 nuclear bombs in the mid part of that decade. There's a lot of major historical things happened that were not necessarily the greatest things in the world that went looking back.
Yeah, there is. I'm getting attacked. I mean, the whole Pearl Harbor, having people finally come here and hit us. I mean, can you imagine how scary that would be?
Yeah.
To not know what was going on. And it wasn't like now we can pull up the internet and it's horrible as the tragic of the Malaysian airliner is, obviously. Yeah. But we probably almost knew about it as soon as it happened.
Right.
And then it was like you would wait till. Occasionally, I'm sure the radio would have something if you were listening, but the newspapers would come once a day.
Right, and as I understand, I watched a documentary on this just the other day. You know, Eleanor Roosevelt was the first person to tell the nation about Pearl Harbor before FDR did it the next day in front of Congress. She announced that that was there. And my dad actually told me about where he was when he heard the news that the Pearl Harbor was bombing. So it was devastating.
I'm sure. I can't even imagine the feeling of, and that's what we talk about, like I said. When we say that the world is so negative right now, of course there's a lot of negativity. There is a lot of things that we just can't fix. But there were at all times in history. But some of these decades and what people lived through, you see why they say they're the greatest generation on Earth. It's amazing what they were able to live through and the tragedy at that time.
Right.
So then we move on to the 1950s. When we look at that and we say President Eisenhower, he guided America through the first early years of the Cold War. Stock market gains, and by year end of 54, stock markets had reached the highest level they've been at since 1929. That was followed by a bear market that lasted 18 months from April 56 to October of 57. During that time, the S&P declined 19.4%. Market gains during this decade led to growth in each of five of the classes that we talked about, different diversification pieces. But the main one that we're looking at is the S&P because that is 100% stock market. And it actually, and this is pretty amazing because I actually talked about this with Dick Petso, Dave's dad, in the office, and we were trying to figure out what was the biggest thing that happened in the 50s. This just kind of pulls you to say, does there have to be something big, or does the market just start to grow? The average return during the 1950s was 19.35%. I'm really no news. To me, that's amazing when you think about it. Unemployment rate was down to 4.5. So things were starting to really pick back up during that time. So it's an amazing when you look, like I said, decade by decade, how this goes.
Right. And, you know, again, going back to my parents who lived through this, Sputnik, when it was launched and those things, and when the Soviets started that they now had the atomic bomb, they said that was, you know, a huge thing for them, although, as we can see, the market didn't react as much as people did personally.
Right.
So 60s is my decade. I was born right in the middle of the 60s in 1965.
Well, we have to take a step back just a little bit.
All right. That's true. Someone else was born in 1960.
Yeah, this is Dave's decade as well. He was born in 1961. Not that we're saying how old these guys are, but just to give you some historical look at things.
Right. And so, you know, despite us being born in the 60s, the market still did pretty well.
They didn't destroy it.
Right. The S&P did 7.81% during that decade, and unemployment rate ran at 4.78%. Obviously, there was a lot of civil unrest during that period of time. We had Vietnam, Kennedy was assassinated, we had the civil rights, all the riots and so forth, the civil rights movement was going on at that point. Martin Luther King was assassinated, Robert Kennedy was assassinated. There's a lot of significant historical things happened there, but the market still did pretty well.
I think what we're trying to point out by saying some of the negative things that happened during these times was everyone kind of feels the same now. Why would they invest? So what we're trying to show you is that there were a lot of times in history that a lot of negative things happened, and there were still a lot of good reasons to invest in the market.
Right.
So as we go through this again, we're discussing history decade by decade. We do need to take a quick break, and I really hope someone will pick up the phone and call us out there. 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or you can email us, petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net. I know that somebody out there has some great stories to share with how they lived through things, what was happening, what stocks they purchased, just some interesting facts for us. So please give us a call. And when we come back, we'll go on to the 1970s, my decade.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. Money Matters with Dave Petso on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone with Tom Brown, and we are filling in for Dave Petso. We've been talking the history of the stock market, but we need your calls. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO, or shoot us an email, petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net. We are going to go right to the phone now because we do have a call from Michael.
Hi, Jennifer and Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Michael, how are you?
I'm doing good. I listen to Dave's show pretty much every week, and I enjoy it when you guys come on. So
thank you.
I like your show today. The history of the market is very interesting. I believe if you pay attention, you can learn from history.
Absolutely.
So my investing story, so I worked at First Security Bank in the early 1990s, and so that was my first stock.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought, wow, this is easy. It just goes up and you get a dividend. I invested in their 401k too, and I had no idea what I was. I just picked some of the, some of the balanced funds and large cap growth and, whatever they were. I picked four of those, and I started with 1 or 2% of my payroll. I forget. I think it was 1%.
Uh-huh.
And so First Security was my first stock, and so then I'd been watching Albertsons, and because it was a, in the 1980s and 90s, it was a good stock and paid a good dividend, and then it got in trouble and came down, so I bought that, I think, in the low 20s, and then it kind of rallied a little bit, and Larry Johnson came in, and it went up on the optimism he was going to do something, but then it tanked, and so I sold when it started going down, but I had a net on that, a net gain, so.
Okay.
Then I did the same thing with Micron. I watched that go up to about 100 or something like that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the way down, I learned a lesson on that one.
Uh-huh.
I watched that and I thought, man, that's a good buy. And it was, I think I bought that between 40 or 50. So after it went through 50, I bought it. And it kept going down and down and down. And I got out somewhere in the 20s, and I thought, man, I better just, get out of this because this isn't looking good. So I got out of that in the 20s, took a loss on that.
Mm-hmm.
Learned the lesson of writing a loss off on my taxes. So then I had my eye on Micron Electronics.
Right.
Same thing. So, and one of my coworkers had Micron Electronics, and she raved about that. So did the same thing. So I bought that, made a little money on it, and then I sold it. I thought, man, maybe you better sell this because it might be the same thing Micron did. So I sold it. And it did. Then it went.
Yep.
And then it went all the way down to 3-something. So I took the bait and I bought some more of it and held on to it. And then it just pretty much
went away.
I think I sold it at about $1 a share or something like that. So I took the loss there.
Mm-hmm.
So then my last individual stock was the Canadian Coal Trust. I forget what the heck the name of it was. But it paid a really good dividend.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was about 6% dividend. So I had that for a while, and it did okay. And then it just went belly up. And so I thought, okay, that's enough of that. That's enough of the individual stock thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the 401k and the mutual funds have been very good to me. So I would just say, boy, if anybody is thinking about doing that, or, you should really get into your 401k, and every time you get a raise or something, just increase your percentage in the 401k.
It's really easy, isn't it?
It really is, and it's the way to go. So that's pretty much my story, and thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling and sharing.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You know, it's funny, a couple of things that hit me on his call was when we talk about Micron, I would have to say I don't know probably anybody that lives in Boise, well, maybe not anyone, that doesn't have a Micron story at some point. And Albertsons as well, just because I remember the day when Larry Johnson decided to ride out of town, right, and Dave making that news story and how big of a deal it became in town and how he wouldn't talk to Channel 7 News because Dave made a comment about him. These are some of the stories that we're talking about. It's just been so interesting, even in this little town, to watch how companies have came and gone and shrunk and grown MK over and over again. Washington Group. I mean, you think of all these stories, and I have to agree with Michael. It's you go into your 401k, you use mutual funds, and not many people can say, oh, I bought this mutual fund, and the CEO came in and took all the money and left. It doesn't work that way because they're more diversified. You get more exposure to different companies, and it's not an all-or-nothing game with more than one company. Good companies go bad. It happens sometimes. Enron's a perfect story. WorldCom, those were large companies until they weren't anymore. And another thing that Michael hit on are dividends. Sometimes when you're researching a company and they pay a high dividend, it doesn't always mean it's a positive thing. So, again, there's more homework that needs to be done than just the dividend side of it.
Right. It was interesting, the Microns, right? Like you said, a lot of people around here probably have their own, if they invest in Micron, have their Micron story. Some are good. Quite a few could be bad. Some are probably hit and miss. I worked at Micron for a number of years, and I have a lot of personal stories about Micron, but it's interesting how we can get caught up into those things, and when you're not really doing it for a living or whatever, and you're just buying a stock because it's local and so forth, it can really get you in trouble, just because.
You know, during the tech time, too, a lot of advisors were caught up on that bandwagon as well. It wasn't just the everyday investor. It was interesting to watch. 1999 was an amazing year when you think back on the indexes and the different stocks that were in it and which ones did poor and which ones did well. And it was all tech. When they say that 1999 was the best year of the market, well, it was the best year in one sector. There were a lot of companies that were down during that time.
Yeah, in fact, when we're talking about indexes, NASDAQ was just on fire because that's where all those stocks were traded.
Yep.
I mean, not all of them, but
a good majority
of them were.
Yeah. So when you think about that, and then you think the flip side of that in 2000, oh, I just got crushed in 2000. Well, there were more sectors up than down, and we're not saying that wrong.
Yep.
That's exactly what it was. So, again, this is the historic look at things when you think, where were we when all of this was going on? And, I mean, the world was so tech at that time. Again, Jim's favorite guy, Warren Buffett, they said he lost his touch. Diversification was dead. All you needed was tech. We all know that that probably wasn't the case, but at that time, that's what everything was pushed towards.
Right, and the big thing at the turn of the century was day trading. I'm just going to go home and day trade and do it for a couple hours, and I'll be done for the day, and I won't have to work anymore.
Yep, quit my job and trade stocks. So right. it was definitely an interesting time back then as well. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'd love more stories. We're going to go into the last few decades that we have history on here. But please give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or shoot us over an email, petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Good morning and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone with Tom Brown, and we are CFPs with Petzo Financial, but we're filling in for Dave Petzo this morning while he is back in Boston visiting a few mutual fund families to bring good information back to us. We are talking history of the stock market. We're going to go with four calls because we're going to count the
emails.
So we're at four, so two more, but we don't have a lot of time left. So if you have a quick story, give us a call at 580-KIDO, 580-5436, or petsofinancial@petsofinancial.net. Well, when we left, we finished the 60s, and now we're going to go into my decade, the 70s. At that time, oil prices were going crazy. A deep recession hit America. Stock market actually plunged 45.1% from January of 73 through December of 74. Unemployment reached 8.7 in 75, the highest level that it had been in since 1941. Banks raised their prime lending rate to 15.7%. Can you imagine paying that much just to get a loan? Just blows my mind when you think back about that. So the average return, though, even through all of this, is 5.86%. still made money, even with all the negativity that was going on at that time. So, looks like Craig's going to help us out here and give us a call. So we're going to pick him up first. Morning, Craig. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, Jennifer. How have you been?
I've been good.
Good. I really only have one. I guess I it took a while to learn, but I only have one successful stock story.
Okay.
And that's back in 1986, I bought Microsoft.
Oh,
and
yes.
I bought probably $5,000 worth, and it split about five or six or seven times. And then I took all that money, and I thought, well, you know, I can do this with other companies. So two of the major employers in the area, I ended up being in stock purchase plans, which I lost my shirt on those because of the up and down cycle. And that's so I only after about, I don't know, 15 years or so, I realized that buying single stocks was really not the best idea.
Right.
And the diversification was best. Unfortunately, the first one I bought got me quite a bit of money, and then I spent it all, of course. Because I thought, hey, I can see the future. I can predict, you know, some of these money market timing things. And but really, what I was looking for was gross trending, which is what you folks do, which is what I appreciate. And I want to, give you folks kudos for all the research you do, because it's really a matter of determining where the market is going and what sectors, and being able to help understand the trend, not necessarily identify everything in the market.
Absolutely. So. We appreciate it, Craig.
Oh, sure. You're welcome.
All right.
Anyway, take care. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, you too.
Thanks, Craig.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, that's an interesting deal. I tell people, you know, when you make a call, and sometimes it's getting out of the market. It's not what stock you bought that you were real successful. It could be I sold and it just worked out. The market went right down and sold that. And sometimes when you make those calls and they work out, it can be the worst thing for you, because then the next time you think you actually know something, and that's when you can really damage yourself.
And sometimes even if the financial side of the company feels strong, looks strong, everything appears to be good, you're also depending on what Wall Street thinks of the company.
Right.
It's not always dependent on just that company, because we get calls all the time saying, I did my research. I thought this was a great company. Everything looks so good. How come it went down?
Right.
And plus, why we think that when we buy it, that's the starting point for the next run. I don't know why we get in our head, too. I'm in. Let's go. But that's how we think as well.
Exactly. We're moving on in time. And the next decade, the 80s, which is my second decade, I'll call, because that's when I graduated from high school and started college. I actually graduated from college that decade also. We have a big deal, obviously, that happened economically in the 80s was the worst recession in 40 years happened in the early 80s.
And the funny part about that, it was the year after Dave started in the business. Not saying anything, but.
Right. So we either say that he came in and the recession that caused the recession, or that he was just getting ready to get, for when it came out.
Yes.
He'll take the came out part.
There you go.
But, you know, the 80s were obviously a very tumultuous time, and Ronald Reagan was president, started in right at the beginning of the decade, and, you know, during that decade, he was shot. We had the recession, we had some major things going on, we had internationally, there was all the stuff going on with the, going back and forth with the Russians and trying to figure out how we were going to deal with them and how Reagan stood up to them, and really started the ball rolling toward the Berlin Wall coming down and the basically dissolution of the Soviet Union. What he did had impacts for a long period of time. As far as the market was concerned, although it started off a rough patch, it certainly ended well, and the S&P had an overall return of 17.55%, and the unemployment rate, although we had a lot of recovery at that time, it was running at 7.27%. Another thing that was interesting, that kind of tailing off what Jennifer had mentioned in the 70s, inflation was so high at the beginning of the decade, it actually ended up averaging down to 5.09%. But if we compare that today, those are pretty interesting numbers when we look at unemployment being at 7.27% and inflation running at 5, we're running more closer to 2 to 3 right now in inflation, and unemployment rate is at 6.
So. And I think the part that I pull from that, too, is how can the market do well with those numbers?
Right. It's amazing.
It doesn't make any sense, right? When we try to logic this through and say, if we have high inflation, the market's going to do bad, or right. If we have this, this is going to happen. And it's like we try to analyze what will cause things to go wrong, and it doesn't ever seem like it kind of goes the way you plan.
Right, because if we just give you one those numbers and don't give you any of the others, you would think, well, the market must not have done too well during that time. But
so we're going to take our last break here. When we come back, we're going to go over what we all remember, because 08 is right here. Yesterday it happened, and everyone talks about what do we do to prevent that from happening again. So those type of conversations, we'll talk about the 90s, but we're going to try to rush through those a bit. Give us your calls, 580-5436-580-KIDO, and we'll be back to talk more history.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Jennifer Stone, and Tom Brown and I have been sitting in for Dave Pezzo this morning and covering the history of the market. We don't have much time left, so we just wanted to briefly go over the last few decades here. 90s were fabulous, of course. The average annual return was 18.2. Then we led into a couple of decades that it wasn't so good. We had a flat market in the 2000s, and then in the 10s we started to get a little bit better again. But I think what happened, and Tom, please add to this, is people got to think of the 90s and the 80s were the norm. The market just always went up.
Right. I think it was setting us up, and then technology just overwhelmed everyone in the late 90s, and there it got people completely away from fundamentals and so forth. So there was a lot of really historical market things happening and going on that kind of, now we look back on it, it seems so simple that, all the high tech and all the dot-com businesses that went bust but were trading at huge amounts. It just was, now we look back and we say, well, that isn't possible. But at the time,
it felt good.
Yeah, everybody was this will last forever.
Right. Well, we really have enjoyed this morning. Going through the history is always so much fun for us. We appreciate the phone calls. And even though we didn't quite hit our goal, it was still great to hear from the callers that did call in. And, again, if you have any questions on this, we'll probably be covering this in a couple more series just because we enjoyed it so much. But if you don't have anything going on tonight, don't forget about the benefit concert out in Star for the family that lost their 12-year-old son. Again, it starts at 5:30, and it is for the Morietti family. So if you're around, come see us and enjoy some great
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Pezzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Pezzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Pezzo and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.